Hello, you're very welcome to the latest Your Politics, the RTE Politics podcast from our team at Leinster House. I'm Áine Lawler and I'm joined today by my colleagues Joe McGraelig, Sandra Hurley and Micheál Lahan. You can call me Sensible Simon, says the Finance Minister, Micheál.
He's coined his own nickname. Does it ever work? Has it ever been successful? I can't think of an example, but that's what he wants to be called, while also promising to put money back in people's pockets. He says Pruden Pascal's gone, but now the country has Sensible Simon.
Sensible Simon. And is it a good time to be Finance Minister? I mean, the domestic economy is showing, what, 4.1% growth in the first three quarters of the year. GDP is up 15.8%. Tax receipts up 8%. And corporation tax so far this year, nearly 4 billion higher than last year. In a way, it's a problem for the government, isn't it?
With this bonanza territory. Yeah. And it will cover up all the problems of overspending and the forecast being wrong. And I suppose, what will it mean for that kind of ambition that seemed really important to Pascal Donoghue at the beginning of this political year, and that was moderating current expenditure? You feel that could go out the window now, particularly at a time when government are under such political pressure as a result of the budget and working families not receiving a bounce there.
And that was the theme, wasn't it, Sandra, for Sinn Féin once again at Leaders' Questions on Thursday, when Sinn Féin Deputy Leader Piers Doherty was again banging the drum about the energy credits, which they've been talking about. And this time, of course, their big theme, that the government was told by their own civil service that households needed an extra €321 this year to cover higher energy bills and, of course, no energy credit.
Yes, and it's really remarkable that 2 months after the budget, the opposition are still reaching for this at Leaders' Questions nearly every day, actually. It wasn't just Sinn Féin. I think one of the other parties raised it as well.
Yeah, PBP yesterday as well.
Yeah. Yes. So they're clearly getting it in their constituency clinics.
100%. And I think the fault line with the budget is the fact that you had this giant headline figure of $9.4 billion in new measures, yet you were taking away the once-off payments. And the difficulty politically is you give people those type of one-off payments, particularly just before a general election, and then it's really difficult to take them away. People have got used to them. They were put in place and it creates an enormous political difficulty.
And you can hear it on the government side too. Cathal Crowe, during statements on energy yesterday, saying that people are coming into his constituency office who had anticipated and thought that those credits were going to be there. So that's a difficult one.
Now, I know the government is saying they've targeted the supports this year, and they're attacking Sinn Féin, saying you just want to be giving energy credits to millionaires. But there is an issue here, isn't there? Because even though the CSO and all those economic statistics might tell us that we're wealthier and might tell us that the country is rolling in money, that's not actually most people's day-to-day experience.
That's the thing. When you hear that, I mean, you think, well, this is a country of millionaires and billionaires. But of course, that's not the reality at all. That's the way, you know, the value of your house, the money that the value of your house the value of the economy generally, et cetera, et cetera. But in pound, shillings and pence terms, or even euros and we don't use them anymore. You're looking at the increase in the cost of foodstuffs. You go to your weekly shop and it's much more expensive. You're looking at the increase in the energy costs, now higher than they were even at the beginning of the war. And that's where people are really feeling it, you know. So there's no point in, there's little to be gained in telling people the country is more wealthy than ever. And then it jars as well. And I mean, as Micheál was talking about government TDs, they're out there and they're trying to sell this positive story to people, but they'll tell you that people are constantly saying, but this is a problem. I'm finding it more difficult. I have more debts. I'm coming up to Christmas. I don't know how I'm going to cover with everything, you know, and it's a very hard sell. I mean, the government are lucky insofar as they're at really at the end of year one, and it's just gone past a year since the general election. They'll have an awful lot of work to do to translate all of this wealth, all of this corporate tax, and all of this apparent largesse in the country into something that will satisfy people over the next couple of years.
And this, of course, brings us to the big infrastructure, the report from this big infrastructure task force that the government's been focusing on for so long, and it was unveiled this week. Is it the turning point, Micheál? It's certainly, it's critical for the government, isn't it, this one? It's success or failure. Because if this doesn't work this time, you can say goodbye to all their targets for the rest of the 4 years in government, can't you?
Yeah, and then I suppose from the even though launched by a Fianna Fáil minister, really, but Fine Gael did want that Department of Infrastructure, didn't they? Mm. And it's ambitious, and it's getting rid of a lot of the regulations that are meant to delay things, and it's overhauling the judicial reviews as well. But I suppose you do get down to the fact that there are no lack of plans across government at any given time. This is just one more of them, and that systems on the ground are often not there at all. And that's where things fall down, and you just feel this will have to deliver very quickly. Mm-hmm. Or else there is a problem for government.
Have you read all 140 pages, Micheál?
Yeah,
last great. Night. You're upper yeah. while you.
Yeah,
I have it here. Yes,
well, that's the first hard copy I've seen on you. Yeah,
and Fergal
was it as good as Simon Coveney's New Era plan?
I was talking to one.
It's got a lot of pictures. Which
I was talking
are very
to one
nice.
Opposition TD today, and he said to me that the basics in this infrastructure plan are logical and they're something people could support, but it's about the delivery. And the point made, 140 pages, he said, there's 140 pages there that if it is not fulfilled over the next 3 or 4 years, people will use it as battering rams against the government. And, you know, we're seeing all the time that the delays that the actual report outlines about the delays in infrastructure projects, a new road, 15 years from inception to development, that kind of stuff, really, it's hard to conceptualize that we've got to that point. So they really do need to sort this out and to action that plan.
Yeah. And Fergal O'Rourke, who was on the Critical Infrastructure Task Force, he's had a really interesting piece in the Irish Times this week. We can't keep objecting to wind farms 10 kilometres out at sea if Ireland is to progress. So what he's saying is there are, I think, 26 key actions, a number of key actions that will have to be taken are early in 2026. I think that's when the 26 comes in. So really, within the first 6 months of next year, again, we can anticipate legal challenges to the new emergency laws on judicial reviews and so on. But the critical actions will have to be taken next year if this one is going to be the plan that delivers rather than just sitting on another shelf.
Yeah, and I saw Michael O'Flynn talking about this from Flynn Construction. He was on the Housing Commission and he said he was reading this report quite favourably because he thought that with the Housing Commission, they didn't have specific actions dedicated to individuals to carry out, whereas this plan does. And you've seen that previously in other government reports. If you think back to the action plan on jobs with Richard Bruton 10 years ago, that absolutely over-delivered. Now, the economy, as we know now, was on the up. Maybe they got a bit lucky in places, but they did follow through on all those actions. And I remember Richard Bruton saying at the time that that was the way to get things done. You have to allocate the individual actions. You have to really specify how things will be carried out. But I don't think it's going to deliver in the short term. This is a long-term plan. It may not even come to fruition by the end of this government, but you'd want to see some progress on it.
What strikes you about it, though, as well, when you read the few bits that I've read, because I haven't read it all either, but
I so never admit that. So like Brian Cowan and the treaty. never admit that.
So much of what they're addressing is what successive Irish governments have introduced over the last 15 or 20 years. You know, all of these regulators, for instance, that are all worked to different timelines and all have different briefs. You know, all of the... If you have a coastal development, for instance, you need to get a marine area permission, you need to get planning permission, you need to get licenses maybe from the EPA, from other bodies, and all of those operate on at different timelines and in and not necessarily concurrently, and that creates just all of these layers. And then you've got the risk aversion culture, and then you've got the gold plating stuff that we do here for EU directives.
Isn't it? Because former Minister Eamon Ryan, the former Green Party leader, was having a serious cut at the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform this week for being too risk averse. And this is something you hear from ministers again and again and again, that there's a culture of caution that came since the banking crash and the establishment of DEPR, and everybody's looking for so much guarantee that the money won't be wasted and somebody won't be hauled up before the Public Accounts Committee to explain, you know, the latest bike shed or the latest, you know, steps that cost $750,000 or whatever.
It's understandable in a way because, you know, you'll be dragged in front of a rocks committee, you will pay a price there emotionally and physiologically by going through that process, I suppose. But at the same time, you know, we are so risk averse, we're getting nothing
done.
Yes,
but if you think Of departing ministers, you mentioned Eamon Ryan. Two other ministers who've departed over the past 2 years, Leo Varadkar and Pascal Dunhu, both said the same thing. They were too cautious back in the years after the crash in that Fine Gael Labour government between 2011 and 2016. They should have started building sooner. They should have taken more risks. But will the current government listen to that? It's very difficult when you're in government. It seems a lot easier when you're out of government to look back and reflect and see that those were the mistakes that were made.
When you pare it down, though, often doesn't it comes down to the strength of senior officials versus ministers and whoever is Taoiseach at the time. And often it's the politicians who lose in that battle. And I suppose there is an inference in this plan that that's going to be different. And you have buy-in and you hear people like Jack Chambers and the Taoiseach saying that there is a greater appetite for risk now. That's essentially a message about senior civil servants saying we've got them on board, lads.
Well, it's a message from the politicians. We have to see how it
Exactly.
The aspiration is there. Let's see the delivery.
All right. That was, of course, one of the big events of the week that had all the podiums brought out in front of government buildings and all the hacks made stand around in the cold because the pictures look so absolutely gorgeous. And government buildings was also looking very well this week for the visit of Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky on Tuesday, an official state visit with his wife also visiting Oris on Uachtaráin. I was quite surprised, actually, Sandra, that the visit went ahead because, of course, Tuesday was the day when the meeting was going on in Moscow between Mr. Putin and Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner representing Washington. The fear in Ukraine, in Europe, that somehow their interests were going to get sold out in this meeting somewhere. You could see the tension, couldn't you, all through the day. But he did come here, which is really interesting. And What was your takeaway about his attitude to Ireland and to that visit?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point you make. I was speaking to a cabinet minister over the weekend and they'd also said they heard the visit was on, then they heard the visit was off, then they heard it was back on again. I think there was a nervousness in government about announcing it publicly. Yes, that's partly due to security. There's an absolutely enhanced security concerns with the Ukrainian president going anywhere. But there was also a nervousness about announcing something that might have to be pulled back because his schedule is so crazy at the moment. But it does say a lot, and I think it says a lot to about his wanting to express gratitude both to the Irish government and to the Irish people that he chose to be in Ireland on Tuesday.
And of course there was another extra 125 million in aid. There's to be a Ukraine-Ireland economic forum. There's also Ukraine looking for Ireland's support for their accession to the European Union, and if the terms of any peace deal would be, although it looks pretty thin now, doesn't it, that it would happen, is that they wouldn't join NATO, EU membership becoming even more important to them than ever.
Yeah. With this new money that we're giving, it's Ireland has contributed 500 million now to, or there around, to Ukraine, mostly in non-lethal military assistance. That's a lot of money that's going from this country to Ukraine. And obviously, we're taking over the presidency in July 2026. Micheál Martin has said as well, of course, that they will push for the membership of Ukraine to be hastened, if you like. So it's very important, obviously, for Zelensky to come here with those opportunities and the importance of our Irish support. What was remarkable, and Sandra, you travelled down to Oris and Uachtaráin, and Micheál, you were down, I think, you weren't inside the bubble, but the security around the bubble for journalists getting into to anywhere where
Just
Zelensky
explain that.
Was.
We talk about being inside the bubble, because it means rocking up
explain.
To the RDS, doesn't it? God knows what o'clock
for
in
a
the
visit
morning.
Of somebody like this. The same as the US President Joe Biden a few years ago or anybody on that level, they have a sort of security clearance centre. It might be at the RDS or Dublin Castle. Journalists have to start there or other people working at the event, and you go through security clearance there. You've been pre-approved beforehand by approving your identity through the Department of Foreign Affairs, and then you go through metal detectors and all the rest of it, and then you're put on a bus and you're not allowed to go anywhere off the bus. You have to stay with the bus, and the bus brings you in within the individual places so that they can track everybody and they can keep everybody in, and that is how it's done on the day. So it's like a little school tour for journalists going around the place.
Yeah. But it's a ring of steel, really, around around him, so that there's absolutely nothing left to chance in terms of anybody wandering in or ambling in from outside of the security cordon.
I suppose it was notable in Leinster House, too, that the sense of enthusiasm that was there for Ukraine, because the reality is that there has been a certain weariness about this, and there have been significant changes along the way as well, haven't there, when it comes to what's being provided to people fleeing the war. The state accommodation capped at 30 days now, and that's a fairly recent decision, and there could be more changes on the way. So what happened on Tuesday seemed to be kind of back to an earlier time in the sense of enthusiasm that was there and was evident among politicians. But
although not universal.
No, not quite. People for profit standing, but not clapping.
People before profit defending that decision and but as you say, that was in contrast to the reaction of most of the people in the Dáil. What kind of welcome did Vladimir Zelensky get in Oras an Uachtaráin? Because again, during the election campaign, President Connolly had been criticised for having a less enthusiastic response than some other TDs during President Zelensky's virtual address to the Dáil.
Yes, exactly. And she was pushed on that. And she said she did clap back in 2022. And she kind of criticised the journalists for putting the question. But she has spoken previously, and she would share a view with people before profit, I think, that the road to ending the war in Ukraine is not to give them more money for arms, not to give them more weapons, that the aim should be to aim for peace. And she would also link it with increased militarization and NATO and all the rest of it. So how did they get on at Oras an Uachtaráin? It was a very quick visit. They only had a one-on-one meeting for 10 minutes and I think 15 minutes between the delegations. So it was very brief. Some journalists called out some questions to Catherine Connolly when we were in the state reception room, which is where the visiting dignitary signs the visitor's book. And those questions were along the lines of whether she supported increased arms for Ukraine. Stony silence from Vladimir Zelensky and President Connolly. Absolutely, they were not going there on that day. So we didn't glean any insight into exactly what was in the meeting other than a fairly bland statement afterwards.
And Micheál, the Ciarán Cóirle managed to get in because it was a big day for the Ciarán Cóirle, basically hosting President Zelensky as he came to Leinster House to make his address to the Dáil, even managing to get in a reference to Wexford in her speech.
Yes, and I think Fiona Murphy did well in the sense of shepherding him into the chamber and out as well, as everyone, almost everyone, wanted to shake his hand. So that was a key moment in her time, all right.
So a big day for her. What's happening in Fianna Fáil now in terms of this report? The lawyers are looking at it and the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party, Micheál, they'll have to wait. Is that it?
Yes. So two sets of lawyers are looking at it now. Jim Gavins is the surprising one there. People didn't anticipate that would happen, but maybe it's not a great surprise given that he didn't partake in the review itself, but yet he does want his legal people to look over it. Curiously, Fianna Fáil's own lawyers too are looking at it, even though there was a barrister who oversaw the entire process. But so this will take time.
You would think that it would just lead to a bit of a delay in the publication, which might lead to it not appearing before Christmas or even appearing during the week of Christmas, perhaps.
Yeah, I think there was kind of careful language from the Taoiseach last night where he said he expected to receive it before Christmas. But of course, that could mean anything. That could mean Christmas Eve, and receiving it is different to publication.
And what's your sense of the people who were most vocal in their criticism of the party and of the Taoiseach before this review was commissioned?
I think it's still there, and I don't think they are overly surprised that things are going this particular direction, that this could be seen, rightly or wrongly, as a tactic, and it is going to stretch it out into the new year. I think there is still a live threat to Micheál Martin if people decide to mobilise at a certain point. I don't think that's gone away.
You don't think it's gone away?
No, I don't think it's gone away. I think there is one showdown in this, whether it's when the report comes out or soon after it, that's going to determine the next 12 months.
OK, and do you think there'll be fight in the Taoiseach if it comes to it?
I do, absolutely. But if it goes to a private vote, it's probably in the balance and in the mix. You do hear of certain TDs who've been identified and called swing states, who would be seen to be getting certain things in higher profile, and that they could be more on the Micheál Martin side as things stand.
So in that scenario, then, what you're saying is that maybe it would be a vote in the parliamentary party, even though there isn't somebody standing at the sides, because Jim O'Callaghan has said there isn't a vacancy, but he'd be interested when there is a vacancy. So is that the kind of scenario we're talking about?
Could trigger a confidence vote, and there is 12 apparently.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it's a private vote after that. It's a private vote.
But the threshold is higher, isn't it, for the to actually depose him? It's much higher than 12. Is it half the PP?
But would he have to go, you see, if there was no confidence? Yeah. Would he have to fall upon his sword? One vote that didn't take place, Sandra, was certainly a big talking topic in the country, and that on the renaming of Herzog Park. But is that a row that's just paused for another day?
I think it's been postponed for quite some time. I don't see this coming back to the agenda of Dublin City Council anytime quite soon. I think it suited a lot of people at the weekend that a legal mechanism was found to get this off the agenda. It wouldn't have won the vote on Monday because of the strength of the commentary from the leaders of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Their councillors weren't going to defy them, but it was embarrassing politically to even have it go to a vote. So I think the lawyers within Dublin City Council were I think there was probably some satisfaction that they managed to get it away, but it has generated huge commentary here in Israel, in the States.
And before we go, Sandra, tell me about Micheál's viral moment.
Oh yes, Micheál had his viral moment during the week on the a balcony overlooking Leinster House when a light fell on him, and I've heard it referred to as his spidey senses because he just he leaped for his arm just shot out, grabbed the light. He said apologies and just seamlessly continued.
And you didn't miss a beat.
Well, I remember playing under 12s for the Marys in 1992. And I don't think any ball that came in my direction in that summer I caught, but I did catch this one.
Yeah, that's what is it about? The GAA might be interested in talking to you. Isn't there a shortage of players in rural areas?
Is there a shortage of lads to give motivation speeches now that Jim Gavin is?
Resilience apparently is the new thing.
I don't know if any of your news clips will ever have got as many hits as that particular.
That's all you have to do. Catch a falling light. Catch a falling star.
I'm sure Keepy Uppies. Could you do something along those
lines?
Wouldn't
be as good as Catherine Connolly.
Right. Okay.
No.
All right.
I could see a presidential run out of this. Time.
It is definitely time we stop this podcast. Okay.
Paul McGrath's birthday today, of course, 66.
Happy birthday, Paul. There you go. We'll talk to you again in a week. Good luck.